Welcome to Radioactive Magazine. We'll be talking with Brian Terrell, Bennett Dibben, and Christopher Overfeld with Peaceworks Kansas City about their protest at Whiteman Air Force Base, roughly 60 miles southeast of Kansas City, 10 miles southeast of Warrenburg. Brian is a Catholic worker and a longtime pacifist and practitioner of nonviolent civil disobedience. He has been arrested over 200 times, mostly in the U.S., but also in Germany. He has been deported from Honduras and Bahrain after protests there. Bennett is a lead organizer with Peaceworks Kansas City. Christopher is a leader in the Kansas City chapter of Vets for Peace and serves on the board of Peaceworks Kansas City. He served in the Air National Guard in Topeka between 2002 and 2011, during which time he was deployed to Turkey and Qatar. I'm Spencer Graves. Full disclosure, I'm also the secretary of Peaceworks Kansas City. So why did you all go to Whiteman?
Well, I'll answer that first. Whiteman Air Force Base is not only is it a place from which the 20th attack squadron there flies drones by remote control over places that we don't know. It's also the home of the 509th bomber wing, the B-2 Spirit bomber. So we're at a time with the various wars going on around the world, both the over-the-horizon war is how President Biden describes the war that's continuing in Afghanistan and the war in Yemen and other places, and also the increased danger of nuclear war. The motto of the 509th wing is execute nuclear operations and global strike anytime, anywhere. And at present, that's not a very comforting thought. So we were citizens who are concerned about the drone wars going on and the potential of nuclear war and the obscene waste of resources represented by both of those.
Right. So what's the Catholic worker movement, Brian?
Okay, well, May 1st was the 89th anniversary of the Catholic Worker, founded May 1st, 1933, by Dorothy Day and Peter Morin. And Dorothy was a woman who, as a young woman, was very much involved in the socialist and labor issues. She had been arrested at the White House for agitating for the women's vote. Though as an anarchist, she never exercised that. And she had an amazing conversion to Christianity and to Catholicism in particular, and spent a few years being very disillusioned and at sea until she met Peter Morin, a French peasant, illegal immigrant in this country, who had a deep grounding in Catholic social thought. And she came to realize that Christianity and the Catholic Church itself actually has a deeper and in the words of Peter Morin, a better criticism of capitalism than even Marxism. And so all these years later, now there's several hundred Catholic worker communities, all independent, autonomous, all very, very different. Most of them are doing hospitality. There are several houses in the Kansas City area, welcoming homeless people, welcoming refugees, and feeding the hungry. Not as we usually understand charity, but in terms of justice. And this leads us to the Catholic Worker has been very much on the forefront of radical movements and the peace movement. The first draft card burnings in the United States in the 1960s, celebrating protesting the Vietnam War, grew out of the Catholic Worker movement. And so that's the tradition. I've been a part of it since 1975 in New York. And I was, after 4 years, was at a hospitality in Davenport, Iowa, serving the homeless. And these last 35 years or more, I've been on a farm here in Iowa, not just 7 miles from the Missouri border. And it's another aspect of the Catholic Worker, is that it's, as well as being a radical movement, and as well as being a movement that does direct service to the poor, it has a back to the land aspect, which is trying to find a way. My wife and I and other people coming and going, we raise dairy goats and chickens and garden extensively, and trying to find a way to live more gently on the earth in terms of the ecology, and also in terms of being less a burden to our brothers and sisters by raising our own food rather than buying it as much as we can.
Interesting. Thank you. Christopher, tell us about Vets for Peace.
Yeah. So my name is Chris Overfelt, and I am a member of Veterans for Peace. Veterans for Peace is a national organization that seeks to educate the American public about the harmful aspects of the American military-industrial complex, and also the harmful aspects of American foreign policy. And we also try to advocate to our the representatives to cut the military budget and to turn that revenue back towards our local communities, towards education, towards healthcare, towards housing. And there are local chapters of Veterans for Peace across the United States, and we have one here in the city. So I wanted to go out to Whiteman as a member of Veterans for Peace to celebrate peace with the other folks out there, and to stand united with people around the world right now to tell our governments that we don't want war in any form anywhere.
Agreed. So, Bennett, can you give us a brief summary of PeaceWorks Kansas City?
PeaceWorks Kansas City has been around for a little while, and they've changed names, but now they're called PeaceWorks Kansas City. And we're mostly about shining a light on the National Nuclear Security Administration, but mostly to that there's 12 sites around the country, but we mainly focus on the National Security Campus. And some of us have grown to say the National Insecurity Campus. And it's operated by Honeywell here in Kansas City. The new plant is, and is the old plant has been operated by Honeywell for 70 years before they transferred to the plant that's on Botch Road.
Great. What's the PeaceWorks is also a member of ICANN. Bennett, what's ICANN?
ICANN stands for the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. And they've also kind of abbreviated also, they're now called the International Campaign to Stigmatize, Prohibit, and Eliminate Nuclear Weapons. And ICANN is a global coalition working to promote and adhere to the full implementation of the TPNW. The TPNW stands for the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. And ICANN won a Nobel Peace Prize in 2017 and is one of the main forces that helped get the now 60 countries to sign on to the PTNW, making it go into effect on January 22nd of 2021, making nuclear weapons illegal as international law.
Great, great. We've had some little back and forth on officially international law is only applicable to the signatories, which are 60 different countries now. When the TPNW was approved, there were like it took effect January 21 of last year with 54 countries, and in the past year there have had six more parties join it, but officially the many international experts on international law will tell you that it only applies to the countries that are signatories, and even then it has no enforcement mechanism. And I think you have a different take on that, Brian.
Well, I think that is, you know, pretty much correct, except that the United States is also definitely a signatory of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which is breaking in many, many ways, spreading the nuclear weapons through NATO into several countries. I'm going back to Germany and Holland this summer, I hope, to join people in the protests at U.S. NATO base, at NATO bases there, where U.S. bombs are kept on Dutch and German and Belgian sites. And the U.S. is signatory to the Geneva Conventions and the U.N. Charter that to have any weapon any weapon or act of war has to be commensurate and has to be discriminate and not kill innocent civilians. And we see that not only nuclear weapons, but so many of the things that we do are illegal. In one sense, this new treaty is just one more law for the United States to break. We're breaking many treaties. I think it's a good tool. But to even go deeper than that, to say, I think just the prospect, and I speak as, I'm philosophically an anarchist, and I find myself in court often arguing with judges about the, about the law of the land, which includes the sixth article of the Constitution, that says that any treaty that U.S. enters into is the law of the United States, the supreme law above every law or statute passed by Congress or any state or city. But the idea that it could be legal to blow up the whole world and kill everyone, to destroy all of creation, the idea that could be legal is breathtaking. And it raises the question about what does it mean? What does it mean to be legal? And we don't expect the criminals to be policing themselves. Historically, there is, the Nuremberg trials. So Germany was never signatory of any of the laws, and most of them didn't exist. That the United States and other countries brought German soldiers and politicians to the stand, and some of them went to the gallows over laws that they had broke, their country had not signed on to. General Pinochet of Chile, for his crimes in Chile, war crimes, was prosecuted in England. The
unsuccessfully.
But they did it unsuccessfully. The perpetrators of the Almazote massacre in the 1980s in El Salvador were prosecuted in Spain. So I think
successfully, right?
Yes, and we're ironically, even though we're being brought into court over and over again, it's a strange thing that we are the ones standing in front of lecturing judges and prosecutors, sometimes lecturing police officers, standing up for what is the law and what's good about the law and what is life affirming about the law. That it's not just a bunch of cold rules that lock people away. It's not just the framework for mass incarceration, which is another crime against humanity, I think. I think it is one tool that we can use, and we have to say, for the sake of humanity, for the sake of the notion of law, for the sake of civilization, nuclear weapons are illegal. And that's, to my mind, that's just abundantly clear that has to be said over and over.
Okay, great. We're talking with Brian Terrell, Bennett Dibben, and Christopher Overfelt about the Peaceworks Kansas City protest last Saturday at Whiteman Air Force Base, roughly 60 miles southeast of Kansas City. I want to mention to our audience Ira Helfand and Michael Chris, the former and current president of the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, got an op-ed piece published by CNN, CNN.com, earlier today saying it's time Russia and NATO stop playing games with nuclear war, giving links to sources that support what Brian was just saying, that if there is a nuclear war between the U.S. and Russia, even if only one side participates, if they incinerate a few hundred cities of the other, it will loft so much smoke to the stratosphere that it will likely not get above freezing, it'll likely freeze hard even in the summertime in Iowa and the Ukraine. So it's a serious business. But you also talked about drones. Let me ask, have any of the drone victims gotten a fair trial?
No. And most of the drone victims have been not combatants, not people who are actually engaged in combat. In fact, that's one of the things about the drone operators that has been recent more news about the horrible moral injury that our service people, who supposedly are being kept safe, they can fight a war by remote control and be home for supper. But the price of on their psyches and their souls is great, because they're watching people. They're not killing people who are holding a gun and shooting people. They're killing people who are, as it's been described, working in their gardens and who are going to work and are picking up their kids from school. One drone operator, this is very, very sad. Man who the New York Times did a special about this Captain Larson just before Easter, the drone operator at Creech Air Force Base, and I happened to be at Creech Air Force Base outside when in my work with the Nevada Desert Experience. Every Holy Week has a walk from Las Vegas to the nuclear test site. It goes by Creech Air Force Base, which is the main drone base, where he had described to his father a situation where he was asked to kill somebody and he had to follow this person. He had no idea why. The customer, as he was told, had targeted this man and then kill him. And then he was ordered to fly his drone to the, in Islam, and in the desert as well, they demand that the bodies be buried as quickly as possible. The funerals takes place very imminently after someone's death. And he was ordered to kill everybody attending the funeral because he had to go home and live with that. This is not things that happen in the heat of battle. And it is, as General McChrystal, who is the head of U.S. and NATO forces in Afghanistan, who lost his job after getting interviewed in Rolling Stone magazine, said that that for every innocent person killed in a U.S. drone strike, the United States makes 10 enemies for itself. So all this, and this goes on to one of the things they're talking about now with Ukraine, is the U.S. wants to supply Ukraine with these weapons. And I'm thinking, my heart goes out to the people of Ukraine, and this is just going to be one more problem for them, that they're going to be making more enemies for themselves, and that their soldiers are going to be suffering from the effects of being involved in remote control war, killing people who, unlike soldiers in combat, who are fighting up against people who might hurt them. At Whiteman Air Force Base, there are soldiers who are fighting and killing working an 8-hour shift at a computer screen like so many other Americans do, and going home to their families. The myth of a safe war, I think that's another place where this coincides with nuclear weapons, is with both of these technologies, where both of them have the promise of having the war be staying over there so it doesn't affect us. We fight the war there so we don't have to have it here. And the idea that we can keep ourselves safe by threatening to destroy the world if anybody messes with us may have given us some modicum of safety for these last decades. But the idea that nuclear war is winnable is something that's now very popular, both in the U.S. military and the Russian military. So we're entering into a very, very dangerous time. And neither the drones nor the nuclear weapons make us safer or make the world a better place.
Indeed. For the record, that captain that you mentioned featured in the New York Times page one story on what was it, Easter Sunday or something, or within a week of that, killed himself because he couldn't live with himself after killing so many people.
Yes.
And there's also one of the things that New York Times did not mention was that there was a report that 90% of the people killed in U.S. drone strikes were not the intended target. And that was a classified document released by a guy named Dan Hale. Any of you know about Dan Hale? Want to comment on him? Or he's serving time in prison. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, yeah, Daniel Hale is doing serving 45 months in federal prison for doing exactly what some Russian soldiers are being praised for, telling the truth about what they're doing. And he was in the Air Force from 2009, 2013, and afterwards worked as a contract with the National Security Agency. And he was one of the people who did the, when the drone operator is sitting at his or her computer, they're in communication with people all over the world, determining, you know, who's a danger and where a strike ought to be. And so he's the one who came up with that. And I think we need to be careful with that only 10% are the intended target, because that doesn't mean that 10% are guilty. Because exactly. as you said, Spencer, none of them have been tried.
None of them,
and many of them are mistaken identity. Another drone operator in that same article, one who thank God is still with us, talked about how he had was ordered to kill. There was a man who was identified as an Al Qaeda operative who needed to be taken out. And again, didn't kill him while he was killing anybody, but just killed him while he was going about his business. And he'd killed this man in front of his children.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt horrible about it, but he knew this was a terrorist and had to be taken out. And he said he went home and he hugged his kids. And then he found out a few days later, he was given instructions to target the same man. So the person he killed was not correctly identified, but he was one of the targeted ones. So that's one of the people that, you know, not to mention that would only be one out of 10. Most of the people are just in the wrong place at the wrong time. This whole myth of this being precise. These drones, they shoot 500-pound missiles. The horror of it is one thing is the drone that they operate out of Whiteman is called a Reaper drone, and the Hellfire missiles. The missiles are called Hellfire. So this idea is very, very, that the United States, that these people are bringing the Reaper and raining hellfire on our enemies.
Right.
And the Reaper is supposed to be the angel of death. God's supposed to decide when the Reaper comes and knocks on your door. And hellfire is not for us to decide where hellfire is being applied.
Exactly. So Dan Hale is in prison for releasing classified information to the American public. And I'm, from my perspective, as a former, so I spent 6 years in the U.S. Air Force during the Vietnam War. It seems to me that information was classified to keep it from the American public. Okay. Well, we need some government secrecy, but I think we need to put some big, greater limits on that. So how would you compare the news coverage of the Russo-Japanese war with that of military operations involving the U.S. in Afghanistan, Iraq, Yemen, and elsewhere? Mm-hmm. Bennett, Chris? Go ahead, Brian.
Okay, well, I think it's... yeah, it's, you know, the news coverage is, you know, of course, it's very stilted. And I want to be very, very careful to say that that the attack on Ukraine by Russia, I think it's inaccurate to call it unprovoked, but it is certainly unjustified. And it's a horror. And it's, you know, my heart goes out to the people of Ukraine.
Yeah,
and my heart goes out to the people of Afghanistan.
Yeah, we're getting short on time. So can Bennett, what are some of the other major activities, right quickly, that PeaceWorks Kansas City is organizing?
Well, Memorial Day, May 30th, we're going to meet at 10:45 a.m. to join in a peace walk for 1 mile to the NSC plant. And the and if you don't want to join the 1 mile walk, you can meet us rally at 11:45 at 14540 Botts Road in Kansas City, Missouri. And everyone who attends the walk or rally is welcome to join in the die-in. The die-in is to remember those who have become ill or have died of the many toxins they were exposed to at the old Bendix plant. And the die-in is also to remember those who have been negatively affected by the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Syria, Somalia, Yemen, and the most recent Ukraine. We're still working on the Hiroshima Nagasaki Remembrance. It's generally the first or second Sunday in August, but our Kansas City, the PeaceWorks Kansas City Local Art Fair is this September 24th and 25th, and it's at in Theus Park at 47th and Oak.
Great. Christopher, what's Vets for Peace up to?
Yeah, our next event, a couple of us from the local chapter here in Kansas City is going to be joining PeaceWorks on Memorial Day. So we'll be out there at the security complex as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. So you have been listening to Brian Terrell, Bennett Dibben, and Christopher Overfelt discuss a protest action last Saturday, April 30, at Whiteman Air Force Base, home of the 509th Bomb Wing, which operates the B-2 Spirit stealth bomber. They also have Whiteman is also one of roughly 28 locations in the U.S. from which unmanned aerial vehicles or drones are controlled. Links to some resources relating to this discussion are available in the description of this episode on Radioactive Magazine. Go to kkfi.org, then find News and Public Affairs, then Radioactive Magazine. Tune in next Tuesday to hear Bill Claus and Craig LeBeau discuss this year's Fringe Festival, which will include political commentary by Bill Claus and interview with three leading leaders in local theater. Finally, I wish to remind our audience that KKFI is your community radio station. Volunteers decide what shows get slots in our 24/7 schedule. If you have an idea for something you'd like to hear on KKFI, you can write to news@kkfi.org or call KKFI during normal working hours. I'm Spencer Graves. Craig LeBeau is at the controls. Thank you for listening.